with Governor Attia. This is Tape 51, Side 2.
Well, I was talking about that trip, and I mostly offended when they had invited as a special guest a representative from Libya. And he was up there giving a speech, chewing up the U.S. And, you know, I had said to my friends, I don't need this. I don't have to come here and get insulted. But I didn't make any more fuss than that. It was an interesting trip. It was good to see some of these other folks. You get a flavor of, you know, what's going on. And but I don't know, this whole idea of why he's come on over from Taiwan, that's not, that's a long haul. That is a long haul.
Well, then, shortly after that, in November of 85, you made a trip to Japan and Korea.
Yes.
And I had down here that you had 68 appointments in 9 days.
9 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that could very well. I was just figuring 1 week.
Gee.
But we really piled it on. Some were social calls, with the sense that they were immediate prospects, but I knew, again, that you have to call on these people.
Right.
And all of the people that we met and made contacts with, just keep knocking at their door, let them know we were there and interested, and you just never know when something's going to happen.
Did anyone coach you in terms of how to build rapport with people in the Orient?
There were some things that were said, more of cultural impact. But I've given speeches on the subject, and in the sense that I didn't go there even initially with a great deal of trepidation and nervousness about what was going to happen. Because I always approached it from the basis that there are cultural things that you need to know and understand. But they're human beings like I am. Many of them had families, they had children they were worried about, their business, and how they're going to be promoted or not, how their families are doing. And so they are human like I was. Second, this matter of shaking hands or bowing never made me nervous. I had just made up my mind if they bowed, I'd bow. If they put out their hands and shake hands, in other words, I'd let them be the lead in that.
Right.
I wasn't going to worry about it. And that worked out perfectly well. I think I have described to you in terms of you go there and eat whatever they serve you, don't ask. And I would tell them I don't eat everything at home, and I don't. And they probably don't. They probably have their favorite meals and some things they don't eat. So, you know, again, I wasn't nervous. I wasn't insulting them. As it turns out, my demeanor is quite acceptable in those countries, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, versus a traditional American, let's go make a deal, you know. Soon learned that things are different, that you don't just rush in and start talking about your subject, I mean, what you're there for. You learn that you talk about the weather and how's everything and the economy, whatever, you know. And then finally, and maybe not even on the first visit, you finally get down to what it is you want to talk about. Mm-hmm. But that again was that was part of my own demeanor anyway. I'm patient, and so that was acceptable. So I think to that extent, and I just happened to be that's the kind of person I was, I think I did very well, and I think people in those countries look forward to my visits.
In your business now, do you coach other people?
I would tell them. I made talks to Portland State University, and sometimes they want to know about these things, and I tell them pretty much what I'm telling you right now, that just have to understand there's some differences. Let me give you a good example of the things you really need to know. And it's important, for example, in Saudi Arabia, you never show the soles of your feet.
Right.
Well, okay, you know that, so don't do it. That's just one of those things that you should know. I'll tell you a real funny story. When I said you just don't rush in and start talking about what you talk, I can recall a visit in Japan. We went to Osaka, went to a sawmill. Incidentally, that sawmill, that was not a small sawmill. It wasn't a big one. It was a medium-sized sawmill. Had 30 employees. You know, the lot of sawmills in Japan are entirely different than we imagine here. Anyway, we went in first, you know, here I'm used to jumping out of the car and going in the sawmill. You don't do that. So we got out of the car and went to the head guy's office and had some tea and chit-chatted, and then we went out. On that particular visit, I think we had Channel 2 with us. So we went through the sawmill. And I'm looking at this sawmill. I said, gosh, this is so antiquated. If we can't compete in the United States, we have no right being in the wood products business. But anyway, we went through this sawmill. And now we're out. And Channel 2 was interviewing the number one person who spoke Japanese, but working through an interpreter. Let me back off a minute. While I was in the office, they were saying this young man spent 5 years in Oregon. But we didn't get into that one. So now we finish our sawmill visit, and they're interviewing the number one man. So I'm chatting with this young fellow. You were in Oregon for 5 years, yes. What did you do in Oregon? He said, I bought rugs. Rugs? I said, that's my business. And I'm thinking, what in the world would he be doing buying rugs in Oregon? So I finally said to him, well, what kind of rugs did you buy? Well, he said, Douglas fir, pine, hemlock. He said, rogs. Rogs. Not logs. Rogs.
Oh!
That's what he said. I haven't told that story because I don't really want to embarrass the Japanese or anybody else.
Sure.
It was funny. Because I said, rugs. What kind of rugs you buy? Douglas fir, hemlock, pine. And what he was saying was rugs.
Well, what about subtler things like, giving of gifts, how gifts are exchanged, who's introduced, eye contact, things that the State Department are usually very sensitive about?
That kind of came natural. First of all, in terms of how you converse, the number one person is the one, both sides. Mm-hmm. And if we are meeting at a table like we are now, which is, let me call it for the sake of the tape, is a oblong table, mm-hmm. We don't sit at either end of the oblong, meaning the number one people. We sit in the middle, mm-hmm. on either side. So I would be the governor in the middle of the table on one side, and the chairman or the president of the company I'm meeting with would sit in the middle of the table on the other side. But that I didn't have to worry about because it usually said, you sit here. And pretty soon I learned what that generally meant, that you sit in the middle. So they would always say, you sit here, you know, because this was a matter of courtesy now. It wasn't a demand, it was just a courtesy. Here, Governor, this is your seat. And just so you learn that. Mm-hmm. I think I probably violated this. Japanese don't really like to be touched, and eye contact probably violated, but I don't think it was offensive. If I ever did touch anyone, it was someone that I knew very well for quite a period of time, and it was kind of mutual.
Would you either be briefed or asked to be briefed by anybody in the federal government before any of these trips?
No, I never had any briefing from anybody. But it's a whole matter of how you go. By that, I mean, if you go there uptight, nervous, you're certainly bound to make a mistake. I read, after I left office, a book called The World-Class Businessman, I think is the title. And so it gave you bits and dabs of different countries and some of their cultural differences. I said, I want to read this thing to see how I screwed up of all these years. And really, I didn't read anything there that would say to me I really screwed up badly. And this was all after 8 years of doing it. You know, I think they'd be very much like we are. Meaning, if a Japanese came here and did something a little different than we would do it, we wouldn't be offended by that. You know, we don't expect them to know how we operate, or you know, in minute detail. And I think they give us the same credibility, that it wasn't a matter of insult or, you know, deliberately trying to insult them. Maybe you lose a little points from ignorance, but it depends on the size of your error. Mm-hmm. Just little things, they wouldn't be offended by it.
You didn't have any major faux pas then?
No. I couldn't, you know, I read the book and I treat back and there really isn't anything. In terms of a gift, generally you don't open it. But oftentimes, and you exchange gifts, oftentimes I would like to have them open it, my gift to them. And you'd say, do you mind if I open it? And usually they'd say no. So that wasn't a big deal. But you know that traditionally you give a gift and you don't open until you leave. And oftentimes I would do just that. But there were many times when we mutually opened them, our gifts. And we always went with some kind of gift of some kind. And obviously, the bigger the person and the bigger the company, the better the gift.
Right.
But I never went overboard in terms of gifts. You know, $15, $20, or, you know, I didn't get into the hundreds of dollars for gifts. So, and we'd exchange gifts.
No calamities or accidents like poor President Bush's vomiting in the lap the Prime Minister of Japan.
I tell you, I do wonder from time to time, and I'll never know because I never really asked the question. I'm not much of a drinker, mm-hmm. and so I drink a little bit, a little sake or mm-hmm. whatever, and I sometimes wonder, well, if I'd been a regular guy, you know, really go out and drink pretty well and maybe get a little bit groggy, that may have scored a few points. I don't know that. I just say, gee whiz. But that's not a social gaffe. It's just you wonder.
I presume then that you didn't do any singing at karaoke
Oh, yeah,
bars.
I did that. I did.
You did?
Well, not at a karaoke.
That seems out of character.
Actually, the funny part was in Japan, in Suwa, and I sang one night. And there was three of us singing at the same time. And one was Japanese, one was Chinese, and one was me. And I think we were singing I'm sure this wasn't a song, but something like Deep in the Heart of Texas, you know. the three of us singing this song. And I have been, you know, they go to these places. In Japan, I remember in Taiwan, and now that I think about it, I really never did that while I was governor. I think after I was a governor, they figured they could
right.
take me to these places.
You must have had a little sake under the belt at that point.
Yes, we'd go to these places after dinner,
right?
And there they had let's call them the hostesses, and they'd sit there, and in my case, they'd light a cigarette or pour your drink or whatever. And they would do some singing. Mm-hmm. But that was always, at least from what I observed, you get up and go home by yourself, meaning you don't get up and go home with some girl. That was the nature of those kind of places. Went out one night with one, who was it now? Japanese, the two of us. He loved to dance. Mm-hmm. And we went to this place, and there was dancing involved. But he just had to dance. And so that's what we did. But I wondered sometimes if I was a, you know, a regular guy, you know, I wasn't training much for drinking. Mm-hmm. One of my first trips, I went to Taiwan. It was a governor, then Governor Lin. And he was known for his drinking. I mean, this guy has a reputation. I didn't know that at the time. So we went to the Grand Hotel, and we were going to have dinner with the governor. We went to the top floor. We were staying at the Grand Hotel. And at the very beginning, there was an exchange of gifts. And I thought that was kind of unusual. We didn't say anything. We just exchanged gifts. Determined later why. We sat down to dinner. This guy was doing the gambe. And it wasn't a matter. You couldn't sip. You know, sometimes your gambe is bottoms up for the tape, gambe. He wouldn't go for that. I mean, it was the whole thing. You have to hold the glass. You know, no drops come out of the glass. And I really had a lot that night.
This is the acid test of a governor.
Fortunately, it was in the same hotel. And I remember that very well. But by and large, I just wasn't in training for that sort of thing. So I try to sneak it by. In China, they have this Mao Tai, and that is powerful medicine. That is powerful stuff. Again, I'd sip a little bit. You know, I try to get away with as little as possible. Once in a while, I'll get on the edge a little bit, but never like that first time in Taiwan, which was the last time I got that bad. So, but I wondered, you know, if you'd been a regular guy and did a good amount of drinking, and I don't know, didn't seem to hurt. Oregon seemed to do okay. And
you had, I think you had mentioned earlier, and I was going to ask you again a little bit on your philosophy on drinking. I saw an article that said, as a young man on a Canada lake, he explains, referring to you, and some others once drank too much hard liquor while pulling fish into the boat at a speedy clip. Atiya said the resulting hangover prevented him from fishing any more of that trip and led to his avoidance of alcohol. Is that accurate?
I wasn't that young, though. This was while in my legislative days.
Oh.
I don't remember what age that was, but I'd been yearning all these years to go up to Canada fishing. The whole story was I went out one morning. I was with Senator Newbery. There was two of us in the boat. We came in for lunch, and at the place where we were staying. And as we were walking out, Lynn said, gee, here's why we're not catching fish. And he picked up a bottle of VO. And out we went. And so we'd catch a fish and take a drink out of the bottle. I mean, out of the bottle. Now, I told you I'm not much training for this, but you didn't realize it. And we stayed out quite a while and finished the fifth. Finished it.
The two of you?
Two of us. And actually, as we were coming in, they were going out to look for us. It's still daylight, but it was. Anyway, I never was so sick. Oh, it was a terrible night. Lynn, he had dinner, and we were in a bunkhouse, and he was playing cards, and I'm dying in bed. I mean, it was just terrible. And I'm sitting ashore the next morning. They're out fishing. And I said, this is absolutely crazy. Here I've been yearning all these years to go fishing, and I'm sitting on shore. But it wasn't that. It was just that after that, that it just didn't appeal to me.
Yeah.
And even one drink would make me feel like I don't want to feel. I mean, a little bit, not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If I have, when I would go out to dinner now, they serve some wine, I'd take it. Say, tell them pour half a glass, but I may not drink more than a couple of sips, and I could even feel that. So, you know, I said, I don't like that feeling, and I said, that's why. So it wasn't a matter of being against it or anything else. I said I had my own free Raleigh Hills treatment is what I had. It's not a satisfactory thing. I never was a big drinker, ever. I do like scotch, still do today. And I would take a scotch drink or two during the course of an evening. I liked it on the rocks, even liked it without rocks, but never drank a lot, ever. But then I went there and, you know, just so it's not a feeling that I care for. I don't.
Going back to what you were saying about being in, I guess it was in Japan or Taiwan, and being, and always making sure that you went home alone.
Yeah.
Were you, well, any time during your career, ever offered anything illicit? or anything unethical?
I'm glad you asked the story, because I want to tell you the story.
Okay.
I was in Japan one time, and we were staying at the Akasaka Prince. At that point where the Akasaka Prince is a very large intersection, it's very wide, and a lot of cars coming and going from different directions. And I only say that because while I was there, I had several free evenings. And so I just walk out across this couple of boulevards, and as is typical, on the side streets, there's a whole bunch of little shops, and there's a bunch of bars and bookstores and pharmacies small shops. Very interesting. So I walked through there. So later on that week, I had dinner with my friends at Fuji Television. And I was telling them, just recounting that, I found it kind of interesting, and I walked across from the Akasaka Prince and just wandered around at night. And one of the men there said, "Oh," he said, you got to be careful. That place, there's a lot of women there that come up and proposition you. And I said, I wish you hadn't told me that. He said, "I've been there 3 times and nobody's propositioned me."
Did you feel neglected?
Yeah, I said, "Gee, I wish you hadn't said that to me." And he says, "Cause you look dignified or something." He was trying to back off. But I said, "I wish you hadn't said that." No, well, one time, when I say that, I'm guessing, but I think it's a pretty good guess. I've forgotten what hotel it was. Doesn't make difference, in Tokyo. Anyway, I was going downstairs, and this young lady struck up a conversation. "Hello, how are you?" "Fine." And so she began the conversation. "Are you here?" Well, that time, it wouldn't have made any difference, but that time I had my wife with me. Now, that would be the closest, if you were talking about being propositioned. She wasn't overt, "What are you doing tonight?" or anything like that. But I think that was the closest I came.
Uh-huh. What about here in the States?
No.
While you were in Salem?
No. Not that I'm aware of, but I wasn't sensitized to that. By that I mean, there could easily have been, but I'm just not looking that direction.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if I would... I certainly couldn't recount it if it ever occurred, because if it did, I wasn't aware of it.
Do you feel that that's remarkable in any way? With your 28 years in public office, that you were never once offered a bribe or something unethical, or inappropriate?
If we're talking about females, maybe, but I'll get to the bribe in just a minute. But it just wasn't an interest of mine. I'm not roving. I love my wife. I'm perfectly happy.
But it could be an interest of somebody else to achieve some objective, which
could be.
An offer could be, might be helpful.
But it never occurred. In terms of a bribe, in a sense, the only joke I have is that in that respect was, I have never ever taken a bribe. And besides, no one's ever offered one. And but I think the closest was, and we may have covered that, was trade one time. And I would consider that as an honor. They would know that I didn't trade, so they didn't come to offer a trade. And there's other things you accept as a compliment indirectly. After Governor Goldschmidt was elected, and there were several instances that things would occur, never really strongly pursued by the media. And for a while I said, "Gee whiz, how come?" And then now I accept as a compliment to me. They would never let me get away with that. Ever. And so unconsciously the media said, "Now Vic really knows. He knows about Gov. He knows. So, we're going to pursue him." But they, in their own mind, said, "Neil doesn't know. So there's no need to, I don't expect him to know." so we don't pursue it.
So you're saying that there was a double standard?
Well, no, I'm saying that I would accept that as a compliment. That, that not a double standard, I think maybe it was, but I didn't look at it that way. I consider it a compliment that they really pursued after me because they expected me to know, but didn't really pursue him because they didn't expect him to know. So I said, I'll accept that as a compliment. And as I say, never having been offered a trade, I think that would be a compliment. I just didn't do it. I wasn't amenable to doing it. That's not a trail I ever wanted to get out on. Mm-hmm. Once you get on that one, you can't get off. Mm-hmm. I never did it. Not once. Mm-hmm. Not once. And it could very well be I'd lost causes that I was wanted, but it wasn't worth it. It either was going to go on its merits or was not going to go on its merits. Now, that isn't the way it always happens, but that's the way it was, even as a governor. I think it was well known that you could take shots at Governor Attia because he will not retaliate. That was not my style. I knew I was giving up something. I was not what you call an arm twister. I just never believed in that style. But you give up something in the process. I knew it. You could vote against his favorite bill. That's okay, because he won't retaliate against you. I consider that good, not bad. Some figure that arm twisting is okay. I don't happen to agree with it. But I knew that I gave up something. But I wasn't going to deviate because that was not who I was, and that's not the way I believe government ought to run. So I was going to conduct it my way. We really diverted here, didn't we?
No, I think that was a very worthwhile diversion.
Okay.
You did a lot of traveling during that that fall, and right after you got back from Korea and Japan, you went on to the Western Regional Council. It was an association of top executive businesses operating in the West in Phoenix, Arizona on December 5th, 1985. And then right after that, it must have been on the same trip, you went on to the annual Republican Governors Conference on December 7th in Wilmington, Delaware.
Oh, Republican governors, yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Was there anything interesting that occurred on either of those occasions during that trip?
Yeah, the one down in Arizona was...
Oh, yes.
You've got that one.
Is that the one where you're talking about the legislature?
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Okay.
We'll talk about that in,
all right.
As we review your career. As we review the legislature.
As we in review.
Anything else?
No. I enjoyed the Republican Governors Conferences. They always occurred right after an election. Right after an election. I enjoyed the Western Governors Conference to a degree. Maybe less in order was the National Governors Conference. I thought there was a lot of cosmetic stuff going on there. I attended only one mid-year National Governors Conference in all my years. They had one in Washington, D.C., and then one somewhere around the United States as a mid-year deal. Made only one of those, which was my last year, 1986. Well, I guess that's what I'll need to see about that.
We'd already talked about issues around Martin Luther King.
I know
that came up about the same time.
Yes.
And and combining the holidays. I guess we can stop now.
Okay.